What's up, Pitt fans? Welcome back to another Pitt Mailbag here on the Post-Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel and podcast network. He is Chris Carter. I am Noah Hiles, and as always, this show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar. Whether if you're in town for a Steelers, Pirates, or a Pitt game, Mike's Beer Bar is right across the street from PNC Park and has the best selection of beer in town, as well as amazing food options. They have over 20 TVs, and you can catch all of your March Madness action right over at Mike's. Come on in and try one of their 500 different available beers, 300 of them being local beers, as well as 80 different local craft beers available on tap. You can try every option out through using a flight, and that's a great option to go about that route, because I tried it and I never run out of favorites to try. Try their steak on a stone for an awesome meal, where you can choose how hot you'd like your steak cooked with a heated stone right in front of you as you enjoy a night out in Pittsburgh. Come on down to Mike's Beer Bar and get your sports fix at the best bar in Pittsburgh. Carter, we come together today to commemorate the life of the 2023-24 Pittsburgh men's basketball team. They were a lively bunch, an exciting bunch, one that took a while to get going and perhaps too long. They won some big games, but not enough big games. And Joe Lunardi is somewhere on a golf course laughing his way to probably shooting like a 91. In the end, this team did what many people felt was enough to receive an at-large bid, but the committee felt otherwise. And after finding out it wasn't heading to the big dance, this team decided that it did not want to play in the NIT. We've got a lot to get into. Carter, before we do that, I just want to hear your opening thoughts on how this season concluded.
My opening thoughts is that if y'all want to go see Duquesne, you can't get to Omaha, Nebraska. Guess where you got to go? It's Mike's Beer Bar, because they love some Duquesne Dukes there. If you want to root on Duquesne Dukes, go make sure to do that. Go to Mike's Beer Bar. They got over 20 televisions, like Noah was saying. Go make sure you watch it there with all the other Dukes fans. But to your point, I felt like this season, there were so many times where Pitt could have quit, where Pitt could have packed it up and said, you know what? It's not worth it, or this ain't the year, or they're not going to let us in anyways. And they fought back to make themselves not just respectable, but a team that had to be talked about. You know, even though that they're not in the big dance, that they were in the first four out. By the committee, they were on the back end of it, but they were still in that conversation. I think it says a lot for the belief, for the morale, and for the direction that Jeff Capel has Pitt basketball going, despite, you know, things that work against it. Those kids are still fighting to put stuff together.
All right, so we'll get into the questions now. We'll start off with Mike, who wants to know if either of us are surprised that Pitt missed the NCAA tournament. Carter, I'll let you start.
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, you and I talked about this for like 2 months, like, you know, leading into the situation. Unless they punched their own ticket, you know, there was a decent chance that they weren't going to get in. Now, you know, disappointed, you know, maybe that, because one, you know, I wanted another road trip with my homie. But in all seriousness, like, we knew what this was. We talked to the bracketologists. We wrote stories about the bracketologists, being like, hey, this is what they're. So I'm not surprised at all. You know, I think that it's just it's another part of the process where we're going to examine what the factors were this year and how things, you know, played into this season. And then, you know, we'll see next year. You know, Jeff, I think it was interesting, Noah, when Jeff Capel was asked, will you change how you create your non-conference schedule? And he was like, no, we do exactly what everyone else did. We just didn't know that West Virginia and Missouri were going to be as bad as they were. So I'm not surprised by the situation. The question will be, will Pitt change anything that it does anywhere, just not without letting us know?
Yeah. I'm not surprised either. I think they were exactly where I had them come Selection Sunday, because if those tournament bids weren't stolen, Carter, this is probably a tournament team. You know, if NC State doesn't win its league, if Duquesne doesn't win the Atlantic 10, UAB doesn't win the AAC, if Oregon doesn't win the Pac-12, if Drake doesn't win the Missouri Valley, Pitt's probably practicing in Dayton as we speak. But it was a bubble team. It was probably it had a better spot on the bubble than a lot of bracketologists led us to believe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not shocked it didn't get in with all the bid stealing. I knew that it would be close. But I thought that heading back from DC that it was going to be close. But then with all those upsets, I just knew, I'm like, there's just no way. The path was too thin. There were too many teams competing for what looked to be just one or two really open spots. So yeah, I wasn't surprised. And if you just look, and again, I don't want to sound like I'm sitting here saying they didn't deserve to make it, because they did. I've written about how I thought this team was better than last year's team, which was a tournament team. But there were things that this team needed to do, and it didn't get done. I remember at the beginning of the season when the schedule was released, I noticed that there's not a lot of Power Five opponents in the non-conference here. You know, and just with two of them being in a neutral site, one of them being a home game and one of them being an away game, I was like, they're really putting some stock into this team having to do well in the ACC, and that the ACC would be higher regarded. And that didn't happen. And I mean, you look down the stretch, we said on this mailbag numerous times that the road game at Clemson was a must win. Yep. They were winning that game at halftime. They didn't finish the job. That put them probably further down on the bubble. And then we talked about last week how in order to feel safe, you got to beat North Carolina.
Yep.
And they were winning at halftime. They were tied with 4 minutes left, but they couldn't get the job done. And should those things have needed to happen for them to feel safe? Probably not. But what should need to happen and what is reality are often two different things. And so I was not surprised by the final outcome here. We'll keep it moving now. Cameron wants to know, was Pitt wrong to have declined its invite to the NIT? Carter, we did some digging into this. I'll let you kind of reveal what we learned.
Well, there's just a lot of things that are in factors here. One, the transfer portal is part of this. It's part of this situation. You know, this allows Pitt to get more active in that. Two, one thing that people don't realize, people think about ticket sales and stuff. The NIT actually costs a lot of the team's money to be part of. So like the athletic department would lose money. The situation isn't as lucrative as like, oh, well, they get to host games on their home court. There's a lot of other factors that come into play. And this is a program that right now you look at, you know, it'd be one thing if this was maybe 2 years ago, Jeff Capel's Panthers that had not sniffed the tournament before. Last year, this team was in the tournament, and there were a lot of people who said this team was a tournament. Jay Billis was on Selection Sunday's shows and saying like this is a tournament team, and like that. I feel like if Pitt didn't get to that point, maybe they take the NIT because it's like, you know what? But when you think that you've gotten to that point where you should be a tournament team and you didn't get your call there, the pluses of going to the NIT just aren't worth the different things. Because also then you play in a tournament that, again, what does winning that get you in the long run? Like, you know, do you get more recruits because you won the NIT? Do you get more spotlight because you won the NIT? What happens if, you know, they're playing in the NIT and Bub Carrington tears his ACL? It's just like, is that worth the risk of that? So I think they came to a collective conclusion. It was a team. I believe it was a team decision. They said, "Hey, you know what? We don't need to do this. Let's reload for next year."
Yeah, I think there are some Panther fans that would have liked to see this team continue playing.
Sure,
but you gotta go down, like you said, Carter. Let's look at what can be gained from the NIT. It, like you pointed out, it loses the school money.
Yeah.
So, and while that doesn't affect the players' bottom dollars, I mean, it affects recruitment resources for the portal, you know, being able to bring people in on official visits and take them out and show them around, stuff like that. That's where those dollars go, not toward NIL, but like for just upgrading facilities and hosting and flying out to meet recruits. Those dollars would be spent on a meaningless tournament. And I call it meaningless because Pitt's not the only team that felt this way. Yeah. St. John's opted out. Numerous Big East schools opted out. Numerous SEC opted out. Syracuse opted out. I believe Memphis opted out like 4 days before the NIT bracket was even proposed. Penny Hardaway said in his postgame presser, "We will be declining." So it they're not alone in this mentality. It's just not a beneficial thing for a team that just missed the tournament to play in. Now, like what Carter said, if this group had finished in maybe like eighth place and it never really had a shot to make it, it might be beneficial to let them get more games together, right? Continue to build that momentum, end on a high note. But that's not the case with this team. You know what you have with this group. There's nothing else to discover. Blake Hinson does not want to risk a potential career-altering injury playing in the NIT. Bub Carrington, same. I mean, we don't know what his future is, but there's a chance he'll be in the NBA next year, and playing in the NIT is not going to make him any more prepared for the NBA. So I get it. And it's unfortunate. I get why people wanted to see it happen. But there's nothing to really gain from playing in this tournament aside from just getting to play more basketball with your teammates. And you can do that in practice. You know, you can do that in open gyms and everything. It's where it's a lot more of a controlled environment. I know another point, people talk about national exposure. To those people, I wanna legitimately ask every single one of them, who won the NIT last year? I don't know. I read about college basketball for a living. I don't know who won it off the top of my head. And like, no one watches. Again, people would watch it if Pitt was in it. I understand that. But you're not just doing this to play a couple extra games for your fans. If exposure is the selling point, then you want to play in something that people are going to watch. And people outside of Pittsburgh are not watching it. You know, if it's only going to be watched by the two teams that are playing. And even then, I think from a fan perspective, I would rather watch an NCAA tournament game than, you know, even a team that I support in the NIT, because those games actually matter. So the exposure thing, when every game is on national television now, it's not 1970 where only two games a week are on TV.
I'll give you a hint of who won the NIT last year.
Okay.
They're named after a famous Pittsburgh sports athlete.
Oh, North Texas?
Yes. The Mean Green of North Texas won the NIT last year.
Right. Yeah, like they were not even...
Open the NIL floodgates.
Yeah, they weren't even remotely on the bubble conversation last year. Exactly. So, that's my point rest. You know, like if Duquesne lost... and it's the VCU Sunday, then absolutely it should play. But man, I just don't see the benefit of it. It is an unfortunate ending. I would have liked to see Blake Hinson play another game for Pitt, but that's just how it all unfolded. So Steve wants to know, is Pitt season still a success despite not making the tournament? I'll start here. Absolutely it is. The big question coming into this year was, is winning sustainable? And it is. This team won as many games as it did last year in the regular season. And if last year conference tournament week went like it did this year, that team wouldn't have been in the tournament either. There were no bid stealers last year. And that team was the second to last team to get into the field. Mm-hmm. So if NC State, or you know, who would have been the equivalent to NC State? If like Wake Forest won the ACC tournament last year, and Oregon won the Pac-12 last year, then Pitt wouldn't have been in Dayton.
Right.
And there would have been no March Madness. So this team was pretty much identical in its overall standing to what it did last year. And I think there's it's a step forward because it did it with younger players. I mean, this team could return as many as 8 lettermen and 4 starters next year. That's unheard of in today's game of college basketball. So, yeah, I think it's definitely a step in the right direction. This team has now proved that it wasn't a fluke last year, that this is a program that can compete to earn a spot in March Madness.
You said it as good as it be said. The goal for this year was to show that last year was not a fluke. They have shown that back-to-back 20-plus win season, the same record finishing the season with, showing you, and with different ways of doing it. You know, last year they had old guards that were brought in through the transfer portal. This year they had young guards that they had recruited themselves, and they grew up right in front of us. And I think there's even more of a victory of that to say, like, you know what? This shows that Pitt can recruit, Pitt can develop, and develop in season and get guys to buy into their system. And now it shows that, hey, there's something to buy into here. It wasn't just a one thing. So now next year, we got to see what happens with the portal. We got to see who sticks around. But next year, you have a lot more to say, like, hey, you know what? There's a tradition that's developing here. There's an expectation that's developing here. And that's the stuff that can build programs for every year to say, like, hey, this is what we expect from you. This is how we build success every single year. So is it a success? Absolutely. Because they showed that last year wasn't a one-off. They can keep getting back here. They got to do the same next year. They got to show that it's not 2 years and done, but I think that they've shown that they have the means to be able to do that moving forward.
Lance wants to know, do we actually believe that Bub Carrington will be back next year? I'll start again. I don't know. What I will say is this. I believe that Bub Carrington, when he said that when he told us he was going to return for his sophomore season, I don't think he was lying to us at that time. I genuinely believe that at that point, Friday evening, less than an hour after his team lost to North Carolina and had its heart ripped out, knowing that it's probably not going to make the NCAA tournament, that the 18-year-old Bub Carrington wanted to return and do better by his team and his program. I think that's how he felt in that moment. Do I think that feeling will remain true? I don't know. I mean, it's hard because from what we've gathered and talking to, NBA draft analysts, Carrington's probably a first-round pick, a late first-round pick. That's his ceiling. But he might have played himself into a little bit of a better situation Friday night with what he did against North Carolina. And it really now depends on what feedback he gets. You can expect him to enter the draft process, and once he goes into the draft process, if he gets feedback saying he could be a top 15 pick, then there is no reason why he should return to Pitt. Yeah. But if his status remains the same and he's a late first round pick projection, there might be some benefit to him coming back to Pittsburgh, working on his game a little bit more, competing again with his teammates and friends, and then going out as a sophomore where he's still going to be incredibly young and could likely be a lottery pick. What say you, Carter?
I think that you're on the track here where you look at Bub Carrington. There's going to be a point this offseason where Bub Carrington is exploring options in the NBA draft, and people are Pitt fans who aren't familiar with the NBA draft process are going to be like, oh no, he's gone. But that literally can go in any direction. I mean, in just a few years apart from each other, Justin Champagne said he was exploring the options and ended up going to the NBA draft just last year. Blake Hinson did the same thing, decided not to go in the NBA draft, came back. It's a chance to get feedback and to say, hey, what do I need to do to get to where I want to be? Now, the people that I've talked to about NBA draft stocks and where Bub Carrington is, and this was before his performance in the ACC tournament, especially against North Carolina, where I think that he really showed some really good stuff there. They get the sense that NBA teams do love Bub Carrington, but they don't love him to the point that he's going to be on their bench or a starter soon. They love him to the point where he's going to be a draft pick that sits in the G League for a few years and then develops, and then eventually, in maybe 2, 3, 4 years' time, he comes up and he's on the bench and he works his way into the NBA. And the question for Bub is, does he want to do that, or does he want to stick with Pitt, be on the big stage, and maybe have a chance to grow his resume and become an even bigger pick next year because he'll be more experienced and Pitt will build around him a little bit more. And maybe there's something there, but there's also the question, does he risk injury? You play longer. Do you suffer an injury that hurts your stock? Those are the questions that Bub Carrington has to answer for himself. I think it's literally a flip of the coin. I think there's so many factors that we don't know that Bub's going to have to take into account, that his family's going to have to take into account. It's just going to depend on what they hear back, what they believe, and what their belief in is that. I will say this, like you said, when he was asked in the locker room after the game, he seemed very strong about sticking around. But again, Bub Carrington, how many times have we seen and been impressed by how him and Jalen Lowe are very present about saying the right things in the right time during press conferences? I could very much see that in his brain at that point in time, he's like, now is not the time for me to be saying, I'm going to explore my options after a tough, ACC tournament loss when the team is wondering if maybe they could get into March Madness. So I wouldn't take that either here nor there. I literally think it is a very close to dead even chance that he could go to the NBA or stick with Pitt. But I also think this, I do think that if he does not go to the NBA, most likely Pitt does find a way to keep him.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's Pitt or the NBA. I don't see him or Leggett or Lowe trying to go elsewhere. Final question of the day comes from Greg. What is the top priority for Jeff Capel to take care of this offseason? Carter, we'll start with you.
I mean, outside of making sure that the three main guards stick around, to me, that is technically the top priority, making sure that Bub Carrington, Jalen Lowe, Ishmael Leggett are all back. I think Jeff needs to get a big or a forward that either A, gets the kind of can replicate the kind of scoring Blake does, which is very unique. And I'm not sure if that's something that you can easily find, or B, can score on the inside and be a dangerous presence there that can change things for Pitt. There were so many times, I mean, and Noah, you and I watched so many games where the guards would create an open opportunity for a Fetty Federico or for a Guillermo Diaz Graham right at the rim. It's just catch it, take two steps, throw it down. And they would stumble or they would just not be confident with the ball and they wouldn't be able to capitalize there. And if you had a center or a big who can consistently deliver there and be able to win, you look at what DJ Burns did for NC State. And I'm not saying you need exactly what DJ Burns is, because that man's a defensive tackle playing center. But if you could get a big that could just be like, I'm here to nut what John Hughley was supposed to be for Pitt, that can be, not just as valuable, but very valuable, like a Blake Hinson can be if he's scoring on the inside and then you have your outside shooters. And yes, they still need an outside shooter, but I think a top priority, if you can get a big, and who knows, maybe that's Papa Conte, maybe he becomes that, but get a big who can score in the paint, defend the paint, and it makes it so that you're not having to worry about whenever you go up against a team with an Efton Reed or an Armando Bacot or a DJ Burns, that you got to come up with a plan like, hey, we need help defense down here because we don't have a big that can stand up to these guys playing and play out.
Yeah, I agree. I think that priority number one is retention. You want to keep as many of these guys as you can. And maybe say goodbye to the ones that you don't want, but there should be at least six guys, I think, six returning lettermen coming back from this year's group. Two is, you got to find a center. I think, there's been a lot of talk about like a stretch four. I think you have the stretch four on this team. I think it's Guillermo.
Yeah.
It's just Guillermo. The thing we learned this year with Guillermo is he's not a center.
No.
But if you allow him to play that stretch four role, he can shoot 40% from three.
Mm-hmm.
Have that length and get a little bit. He's going to add some more weight onto him. Again,
he's athletic.
As a four, that's pretty good, especially as a reserve four. So I think you're good on the wing with adding Amde, with, assuming Jorge will be back. Don't know what you have with Will. You also got Marlon Barnes. You don't know what you have with him.
True.
So I just think that right now they have one open roster spot. You need to get another center. Fetty Federico, while I don't know if you need to give up on him, he hasn't done enough to like have a cemented starting lineup.
Agreed.
Spot, heading into his third year at Pitt. And Papa Conte, I mean, people are optimistic about him, but like
you don't know.
Yeah, he's a kid who's never played college basketball before, and he's coming off of an ACL injury. So I think one more person to the mix that won't break your bank, that's where you start. And then after that, after you add that, you need shooting. Go get another Greg Elliott, because right now you have Bub who can shoot, but is hot and cold. You have J-Lo who's a true point guard. Ish who's a true, kind of like a bulldog, you know, get to the basket. Cummings who's a probably more similar to Lowe than anyone else. So just get a true two who can shoot from the outside, and your lineup's pretty well set up. So those are my wish lists. Wish list items if I'm Jeff Capel. Carter, that's all we got for today. Any final thoughts?
Just that shout out to Abby Schnabel. She's gonna be in Omaha, Nebraska, covering the Duquesne Dukes as they take on BYU. It's a heck of a story. It's an amazing opportunity for a program and an institution that has been, you know, it was storied for its history for quite some time. It hadn't had an opportunity to shine like this, and now it's had it. So shout out to that entire team, Keith Danbrot, all the things that they've done to earn this. They've earned the spotlight, and who knows, maybe they could be one of them March Madness teams that makes some noise and takes down BYU. That'll be really exciting. But you know, between that, all the March Madness games that are in Pittsburgh, and all the crazy things that the Steelers are doing, you can get all that coverage at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
Yeah, we will both be involved in the Post-Gazette's NCAA or March Madness coverage in Pittsburgh. Some really good games, some really good storylines connected to those matchups.
Calipari.
As well. Yes, Calipari, Adufiero, Trey Mitchell, all Western Pennsylvania connections right there, and that's just one team. We'll have you covered there. You can check out everything at post-gazette.com, and you can keep tuning in for all of your podcasts and YouTube analysis at the Post Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel and podcast network. He's Chris Carter. I'm Noah Hiles. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.